the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. It's Friday, a beautiful Friday here in the People's Republic of Vermont. And, of course, the first hour of our program every Friday is devoted to our time with Congressman Bernie Sanders. In 1991, Bernie was first elected, the first elected independent congressman, not a Democrat, not a Republican. The first independent congressman elected to the Congress in over 40 years. He has since been reelected seven times and is now the longest serving independent in the history, of the House of Representatives. So I am very pleased and honored to have with us Congressman Bernie Sanders for our Brunch with Bernie segment. Hey, Bernie, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you, Tom.
And let me toss in, by the way, our website, tomhartman.com, if people want to drop into our live chat room, and our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894. And Bernie, there's an audio clip on your website that we've been scrambling for the last 15 minutes. We finally got it moved over to the computer and everything. And the computer sitting here on my desk just crashed. I lost the chat room. I lost my audio. I lost my communication with Ira, our call screener in the other room. Everything is crashed. It's going to take me about 5 or 10 minutes for the thing to rebuild itself and boot back up, maybe 5 minutes. So I was going to play this thing that you had with Greenspan yesterday. Maybe you can tell us about it.
Sure. It was a very interesting dialogue. Every year, Alan Greenspan comes before the Financial Services Committee, both in the House and the Senate, and I'm on that committee. And just over the years, Greenspan and I have had a dialogue on some of the important issues facing the country. And what I try to do is pose some hard questions to him, not softballs that many of the Republicans and some of the Democrats post them, but just ask him some basic questions. And what I focused on yesterday was the issue of our huge trade deficit and the impact of unfettered free trade with China, what it means that we have a $618 billion trade deficit. And here is a guy, and the reason I posed that question to Greenspan is he has been one of the leaders in this country for year after year after year, saying unfettered free trade is the direction that we've got to go.
Yeah.
And I just suggested to him that at a time when we have lost millions of good-paying jobs as a result of our trade policy, at a time when information technology leaders in America, people who are heads of these large high-tech corporations, Cisco, Intel, and others, are basically telling us that in 10 or 20 years, China is going to be the information technology leader in the world, and that we're going to be hemorrhaging in this country millions of good-paying white-collar jobs. My question to Mr. Greenspan was, has he rethought his position on unfettered free trade, given the fact that it has been a disaster for American workers?
And my recollection
and his answer, to nobody's surprise, is no, he thinks globalization is great.
Well, not only that, he made an outrageous statement, Bertie, and please don't miss this. He said something to the effect of, America has the highest standard of living in the world. And I'm thinking, has this guy ever been in Europe?
I mean, Tom, you raised a very good question. And, you know, when we talk about corporate control over the media and what is discussed in this country and is not discussed, that issue should be right up there. And I'm glad that you picked up on it. And Greenspan repeated it. When I go on national television or in the Congress, very often what one is confronted with is the issue is, in America, we have the highest standard of living in the world. Our economy is expanding. It is doing great. And both of those statements are absolutely factually untrue.
Yeah.
If you go to Europe, you find that does Europe have problems? Let's be clear. It does. Is unemployment high? Absolutely it is. But what many Americans don't understand is that in virtually every European country, all people have health care as a right of citizenship. In most of those countries, college education is free or inexpensive. That in many of those countries, the real wages that are paid to workers are higher than in the United States. That the benefits that people receive when they retire or when they're unemployed are higher than in the United States. So when you have a baby, You don't get 3 months off without pay, but you may get, depending on the country, 6 months off with 70 or 80% of pay. Prescription drug costs are much lower. So when Greenspan very blithely says, oh, we have the highest standard of living in the world, forgets about the fact that we have the highest rate of childhood poverty in the industrialized world and so forth and so on.
The highest rate of teen pregnancy, the highest rate of drug addiction, the highest rate. I mean, it just goes on and on and on.
And that our people work.
And our middle class is being ripped apart.
How many days off do people in Europe have, Tom? You probably
Well, it varies from country to country. When I was in Germany, I think I believe the law was you had to give at least 2 weeks, and typically employers gave 3 to 4 weeks. I know in France it used to be required by law 4 weeks a year.
Actually, I think it's even higher than that.
And in this
country, we don't. People are working 50, 60 hours a week, and people like Greenspan, oh, we have the highest standard of living in the world. And it's just not factually true, and that needs to be debated. But
unless you're a
CEO.
Some
of the assertions that these guys get away with.
Yeah, unless you're a CEO. See, from Greenspan's point of view, speaking as a multimillionaire, you know, and for the multimillionaires, and they're looking at their stock portfolios and the fact that they're only paying 15% capital gains, they're only paying 15% income tax now for the hard work that they do of sitting on their butts around the pool waiting for the dividend checks to arrive, you know, thanks to George W.'s last tax cut where he said, oh, if you earn your living waiting for the dividend check to arrive, you only pay 15% income tax, the rest of us pay 30-some-odd percent. For those folks, actually, the standard of living has increased. So,
that's right. No, that is exactly right. Depends on how you look at it from the upper income. That we have the most unequal distribution of wealth and income, and that's who Greenspan's friends are. So that is his perception. But anyhow, it was an interesting dialogue, and I do like to raise those issues with him because far too few people do. The other issue of the week in Congress that was kind of interesting, Tom, dealt with this so-called Decency Act, which I'm not sure got a whole lot of press around the country. It was called the Broadcast Decency Enforcement Act of 2005. And what that was about, and I'm afraid to say it won overwhelmingly, only 38 people, I think, voted against it. And what that was about was to raise the fine on radio stations, television stations, if there was so-called indecency up to $500,000. And the impact of that will no doubt be, and I heard from a lot of Vermont broadcasters on this, and I'm sure it's true all over the country, that there will be a great deal of fear about playing controversial issues or having controversial people on. If you're a small radio station or a TV station, you're going to be fined $500,000 if somebody says something, quote-unquote, indecent. You're going to be very tepid about who you're going to have on the air. And we are already seeing a movement toward censorship in this country that makes me very uncomfortable. Some of the listeners may remember that just last November, this is really quite incredible, 66 ABC affiliates, television affiliates, refused to air the World War II movie starring Tom Hanks, Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah.
You remember that?
Yeah, because they were afraid that there were a few too many dams and words of that variety in the movie when people got killed. I mean, it was too realistic.
Extraordinary
right?
irony, and that was before the fines were going up to $500,000.
Yeah.
So you have a brilliant film. I thought it was a brilliant film talking about the horror, the incredible horror, and toll, and casualties on D-Day.
Yeah.
Again, these guys just mowed down right and left, and it was a very, from what I understand, factual presentation.
Yes, it was.
Of what was going on during those days in World War II. And these were the people, the great generation, fighting for freedom. We can't even see their film on television because apparently in the middle of the war, not every GI spoke the Queen's English, and there were some profane words in there. But we're not allowed to see this.
Now, let me just toss something in, Bernie. That's a very big issue. But at that time, you know, there was a discussion in the network about let's just bleep out some of these words, and that got overridden by the right-wingers. I think that, not to digress too much from censorship, which is a very real issue and an important one, but I think that these guys in this administration did not want the American public to have to come face to face with the horrors of war.
No, that's right. I think your point is very, very well taken. This all takes place within the context of
they're all trying to they're trying to sanitize. Yeah, in Iraq. They're trying to sanitize it, make it like a video game.
Right.
You know?
Right. Because if you see what the horror of that day was, D-Day was, you know, what you're seeing now, we have over 10,000 wounded and 1,400 dead in Iraq.
Yeah.
But this whole issue of censorship, you'll recall not too long ago, the United Church of Christ that wanted to pay for an ad on CBS and NBC, a 30-second ad that suggested that gay couples were welcome in their church.
Yeah.
And CBS and NBC would not put that ad on.
Yes. Too controversial.
So, too controversial that a church wants to pay for an ad telling people their view.
Yeah.
So these are, you know, a couple of the issues that we were dealing with this week.
Yeah, I thought you did a great job. I've got my computer back up. I'm not into the chat room to let those folks know. And Ira, you're going to have to pop open a window, retype in all the folks online for me, folks waiting on hold. But let me just play just a minute or two of your grilling of Greenspan, if that's okay with you.
Is sure.
Because
right?
it's classic theater, and it's classic Bernie, but it's also, I think, an insight for our listeners into what
now,
Congress
Mr.
is
Mr. Greenspan,
like.
Representing the CEOs of America and the wealthiest people of America, you consistently come in here every year and you tell us how great the economy is doing, and you tell us how great unfettered free trade is. So that's a crisis I want to talk about. Talk about unfettered free trade that you have been supporting for years. We now have a record-breaking trade deficit of $618 billion. We have a trade deficit with China alone of $160 billion, which has gone up by 30% in the last year. There are economists who tell us that trade deficit is going to go up and up and up. People who go Christmas shopping understand that when they walk into a store, virtually everything on their shelves is made in China now. You have the heads of large information technology companies in America who basically are telling us, hey, we ain't going to have information technology in America, no longer white-collar jobs, because in 10 or 20 years, China is going to be the information technology center of the world. Economists tell us we have lost millions of decent-paying jobs. We have lost 16% of our manufacturing sector in the last 4 years alone.
And you continue on. We're running out of time here. I wanted to give you the last 1 minute just to comment on what you just said.
Well, Greenspan basically, his response was that we have the highest standard of living, that globalization is working fine, and that, in so many words, we don't have any reason to rethink that policy.
You know, if there really is reincarnation, you wonder if Greenspan, in his last lifetime, was the captain of the Titanic.
Or maybe in his next lifetime will come back as a worker who is told that he is losing his job because it's going to China and is going to have to take a job for half the wages.
Yeah.
Maybe that would be a good reward.
Yeah, there you go. Mr. Everything is fine with us billionaires, Greenspan. I mean, it's just absolutely extraordinary. We've got about 15 seconds. I'm just a little bit.
And we're going to lose more and more white-collar jobs to China. And yet, year after year, people like you come here and say, oh, unfettered free trade, it's just great. Question, Mr. Greenspan, after record-breaking trade deficits.
We're running out of time here on this. You are so good, Bernie. You are so good. 20 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, Brunch with Bernie, 1-866-889-8894. We'll take your calls right after this.
242-8272.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
They sell us the president the same way. They sell us our clothes and our cars. They sell us everything from youth to religion. Same time they sell us our wars.
Parents are worried about the fact they're sending their kids to college now for information technology jobs. Those jobs are going to China. You're telling me we're creating good-paying jobs with good benefits.
I'm telling you that I don't listen to the anecdotal stuff by itself. I look at the statistics, and the statistics tell us that we are getting job expansion fairly much across the board.
You're not worried about the loss of 3 million manufacturing jobs?
Government's time has expired. The gentlelady from Illinois, Ms. Bigger.
And that's when they cut him off. That was when they chopped you off there, Bernie, and they said, enough of this.
For some strange reason, on that particular committee, the chairman gives me my 5 minutes and not a second. Well, other people seem to have a little bit more time.
Not a second more. Yes, indeed. Okay, let's go to the telephone lines. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Logan in New York is on the line. Hey, Logan, welcome to the program. You're live with Congressman Bernie Sanders. And Tom.
Hi, I have a question for Bernie and then a comment. question for Bernie is there, has there been any attempt to introduce legislation that would restrict the administration's use of access as a way of manipulating the media?
What do you mean by access? Logan?
Logan?
Yeah, I'm not sure what Logan meant by restrict their access. What we are trying to do, what certainly there is legislation, trying to make sure that they do not use government money, which they are doing in a lot of ways, to push their point of view on the private media. We have obviously seen them giving money to journalists who are on television, who are then pushing their line. We have seen them use Social Security employees to push their particular point of view on Social Security. So there is certainly a, we have seen them play games in the press room with their own favorite journalist who are able to ask questions as opposed to other people. So we are, yes, people are aware of that and are trying to stop that.
Yeah, and I just wanted to make the comment also that given that the mainstream media is basically useless, and that there's really nothing information coming out of there, that documentary filmmakers should be really Hollywood should be really is the last hope that we have, I think, in people like Michael Moore. And I think
well, that's a good point. And you are seeing, Logan, election. You are seeing more and more very good documentaries, and people are watching those. Bob, a guy named Robert Greenwald, from California, has done some really good stuff as well on Iraq. On Outfox, a film called Outfox. We're going to be showing in Montpelier, Vermont, actually, Sunday morning, a film called All Well Rolls in His Grave.
Oh, really?
Corporate control over the media. Right,
right here in my hometown. Where are you showing that,
Brian? At the Savoy Theater at 11 o'clock.
Well, I'll be there.
All over the country. We want people to come to Montpelier.
Amazing. I'll be there. That'll be great. Okay, thank you for the call, Logan. And yeah, Robert Greenwald and Earl Katz, they're doing some great. They've done some great, unprecedented, the one about stealing the 2000 election. I'm actually in that movie.
That was very good. Very good movie.
Anyhow, Glenn in Tulsa, Oklahoma is on the line. Hey, Glenn, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom, Bernie. I was watching a clip of the president speaking as he signed the class action lawsuit. I forgot the name they named it, which is always misleading, but it was really the Multinational Corporation Protection Act. And it seems, you know, he mentioned some ridiculous, I mean, and bad examples, but there has to be a better way to do it than limit people to $250,000 of damage.
Absolutely. And Glenn, what these guys do, they have a standard operating procedure. And what is, you will take an egregious situation, and there's an egregious situation every day of the world, every day of the week. And then they will play it up and say, see, we have got to end this. The issue here is if you look at American history, whether it is taking on the tobacco companies, taking on the drug companies, what has happened is when there has been an outrageous anti-consumer act, lawsuits have been one way, not only that have helped individuals, but have addressed the particular problems.
Yeah.
And to eliminate that is simply to protect large corporations to run over consumers.
Yeah, it really was the Multinational Corporate Protection Act of 2005. Congressman Bernie Sanders with his Brunch with Bernie, 1-866-889-8894, 29 minutes.
Patient, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And ladies and gentlemen, in response to a question from Congressman Bernie Sanders, Fed Chairman Alan Greenspan.
The question of increasing globalization, for which the trade deficit is a symptom, is something we should be pleased about. Not concerned about.
We should be pleased about, not concerned about. Bernie, did your jaw hit the table?
Nah, nothing. No, when you're on that committee, nothing much surprises you.
I can't believe Alan Greenspan said that in public.
We've got a $618 billion trade deficit. We have a $160 billion trade deficit with China, which has gone up 30% in the last year. We should be pleased. God, any more good news?
Yeah.
I wonder if we'll have any jobs.
It's like you now have $170,000 in debt on your credit card. Aren't you happy?
It's
mind. But anyhow, let's go back to the phone lines here. We could work each other up into a lather on this one. And have many times. Pete in New York is on the line. Hey, Pete, thanks for calling. You're live on the Tom Hartman program with Congressman Bernie Sanders.
Hey guys, how you doing?
Good.
Congressman, it's an honor to speak to you.
Nice to talk to you, Pete.
I guess I'll be changing the subject a little bit. I don't mean to take away from your excellent discourse with Alan Greenspan there, but wanted to talk about John Negroponte a little bit, and mainly just wanted to spread some information and see if you have anything to say about it. Don't mean to put you on the spot here, about Iran-Contra. You know, they call it Iran-Contra, and I always wonder why they don't call it Iran-Crack-Contra, as the sales of cocaine and crack by our own government was a large factor in that, and occurred under John Negroponte's watch. And I wrote a diary about this on the Daily Kos under the name Nephilim. If you're interested, it's not on the recommended list, unfortunately.
It's one of the better blog sites out there in the world, Bernie, if you're not familiar with it.
Yeah, it lets other users, you know, just write whatever they want, and it works out very, very, very well.
But it's pretty solid, yeah. So, Pete, what's your point? What's your question?
Just wanted to see what you guys know or have to say about that. And,
well, Pete, you raised
John Negroponte's involvement.
I'm not an expert on Negroponte, but I do recall some very nefarious activities that he was involved in. I think with Nicaragua as well, in Central America, I think he played a role down there as well.
Yeah.
We have not seen, I believe, at least in reading the mainstream media, much discussion about some of his past activities. But again, this being the Bush administration, shouldn't be too surprised by this appointment.
Yeah. His activities with Battalion 318, I believe it was, the torture squads that were operating out of Honduras and running terrorism missions into Nicaragua when he was ambassador. He oversaw a tenfold increase in the size of the CIA station there. That's a whole another rant. But in fact, Pete, if you get an archive of yesterday's show, I did about an hour on this, and we went through a lot of the history of Negroponte. So it's out there. Amy Goodman did a really good job on it this morning with Democracy Now! On it as well. So the story's out there. I'm assuming, Bernie, that you think the Congress is going to roll over on this just like they did when he was U.N. ambassador and ambassador to Iraq, or the Senate.
Yes, we think the Senate would, yeah.
Yeah, the Senate will just go along with it. Okay, Alan in Alabama on the line. Hey, Alan, welcome to the program. Apparently, we must have scared Alan away. Let's go to Ken in Long Beach, California. Ken, you're live on the air.
Hello?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, great. Just two quick points here. You mentioned the unemployment rate being higher in Europe. But, I think the reason why they have a higher unemployment rate, I think they actually count their unemployed people. In this country, we play kind of games with it. You know, when people, after just a few months, you fall off the unemployment rolls, you're not counted. Don't you think that's true?
Ken, that's an excellent point, yes.
I hear that all the time. They have a higher unemployment rate in Europe. Yeah, because they count people that are unemployed.
Well, I mean, I don't know what the real truth is between how high Europe is compared to the United States in unemployment, but what Ken is saying is absolutely right. We undercount big time. If people are in high unemployment areas and they give up looking for work, they're no longer counted unemployed. If you're working 10 hours a week part-time and you want to work full-time, you're also counted as employed. So Ken's point is an excellent point.
Yeah.
Well, that's true. And not only that, but, well, Bush just, I think, they were going to, they tried to get an extension on the unemployment, for example. Now, I think it's only 6 months is all you get. And then you're done. They were trying to get, I think the Democrats were trying to get it so you could at least get 12 months. In Europe, I think they get, most of the countries have at least 2 years
if
you're unemployed.
In the Western European countries. And there's two other games that they play with it. One is in Germany. And I'm sensitive to this because I lived in Germany when it was West Germany and East Germany. I lived about 60 miles from the East German border. We used to go over and taunt the border guards for fun. And Germany is still recovering from the merging of these two countries. I mean, there's still an economic problem in that nation as a consequence of this, world-changing event that's a remnant of World War II. So they love to quote the German unemployment figures, number one. And number two, you've got all these former Eastern Bloc countries that have recently joined the EU, who again are struggling to recover from being whacked by Stalin and all these years of USSR politics and economics. And their unemployment rates are very high, and those skew the figures. But when you look at the traditional Western European countries, France, England, even Germany, certainly pre-merger, Italy, Spain, Portugal, so on, and certainly the Scandinavian countries, the unemployment figures overall, when you adjust them, when you look at them as real numbers for real numbers, are generally better than ours are.
Yeah. One more thing, by the way. You know, you always hear from the free traders. And by the way, I'd like to point out an important thing. You know that Karl Marx was a supporter of free trade. Do you realize that?
I'm not surprised.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird thing. You know, libertarians and Marxists, you know, they say you could be so far to the left that you're on the right. Well, Marxists and libertarians believe in two things. They believe in free trade and open immigration. I assume Greenspan probably believes in open immigration, too, to equalize, wages, which is what Marx believed in.
Yeah. Okay. Well, your comments, Bernie, before we move along?
I'm not familiar with that aspect of Marx, and I don't know what Greenspan's position is on immigration.
Yeah. Okay. Ken, thanks for the call. Thanks for raising the issues. Armin in Sarasota, Florida on the line. Hey, Armin, you're live with Congressman Sanders.
Hey, thanks. Hey, Tom, quickly, you ought to write another book. You know, it'd be a good way to describe it to these morons out there, what's really going on incrementally.
What's that?
Call it progressive feudalism.
Progressive feudalism. Well, yeah, it's incremental feudalism is what's happening, although it's certainly picking up speed. Armin, did you have a question or comment for Congressman Sanders?
Bernie.
Yeah.
Bernie, if Alan thinks it's okay for the workers to lose and I didn't know he was French. You know, he says we don't have a problem with it. But if that's okay, you think the Fed had it wrong about Al Capone? Because after all, he was just wanting to globalize with force and leaving the income tax.
I think the issue that we're dealing here is the most important issue, and that is taking on people who are lying to the American people and say, hey, everything is going great. We have the highest standard of living. We're creating good jobs. What are you complaining about? And what we are not hearing in the media is the voice of the working class of this country. I bumped into a woman just a couple of weeks ago in Vermont, small businesswoman. She says, I am deeply in debt from having sent my kids to college. I am working three jobs to pay the bills. You talk to workers every day who are losing their health care, who are working incredible hours and don't have enough time to spend with their kids. How often do we hear that face of America on CBS or Fox television? What you hear is Greenspan saying, oh, the economy is expanding, distorted figures about unemployment, how low it is, how great things are going. And we got to get that message out. Things are not going well for ordinary people. Yes, if you're wealthy, things are going very well. But most Americans are not rich.
Did you see that clip with George W. Bush, Bernie, in one of these highly staged events? Somehow it got a little out of control. This woman was a loyal Republican, go figure. She got up on stage with him. She says she's a 57-year-old mother of three, as I recall, single mother. And she says in order to survive, she has to work three jobs. And George Bush says, oh, isn't that great? That's uniquely American. You're an American hero. And he's like, chuckling and patting her on the knee and going, isn't that sweet? She's working three jobs. And then, changes the subject as fast as he can.
Tom, over and over again, the issue that we have got to be throwing out there and demanding debate on is that with technology exploding, worker productivity increasing, why is it that the average American is working longer hours for lower wages rather than the reverse?
Well, because the CEOs are taking more of the money, in my opinion.
That's one of the real reasons. Free trade is another one.
Yep. Brian in Fort Lauderdale, Florida on the line, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Brian, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. Hey, Congressman Sanders. Thanks for taking my phone call.
Sure.
I'm really glad to speak with you both. You're heroes of mine. Question I have for Bernie is, where are we at as far as campaign election reform legislation?
Good.
Because to me, this seems critical. This seems to really be what we need to be focusing on, because until we start changing, who's up there running the Senate and the House, all this other stuff, we're not going to be able to do anything about as long as the Republicans are in control. And as long as they, are controlling the machines that are counting our votes.
Okay, let me answer that, Brian. I actually just the other day talked to Rush Holt, a congressman from New Jersey, who's been doing a very good job on dealing with trying to make sure that when people vote on a touchscreen machine that they get a receipt, that there's a paper trail. He says he has 100 co-sponsors on his legislation alone. But the equally important issue is not only making sure that when people vote, their votes are accurately counted, but that we also deal with campaign finance reform, because unless we stop the power of big money to buy candidates and influence elections, we're never really going to have a vital democracy in this country.
Yeah, and just as a heads up, Bernie, you're in the House. Over in the Senate yesterday, Barbara Boxer and Hillary Clinton introduced what looks to me like an extraordinarily competent, comprehensive piece of election reform legislation, having mostly to do with process. But, for example, it would have made Ken Blackwell guilty of a one-year felony, making it illegal for secretaries of state who supervise elections to also supervise political campaigns.
Good.
Just a marvelous piece. And what was horrifying to me was that I did not see it in any of my – it wasn't in the Burlington Free Press. It wasn't in the Times Argus. No AP stories. It wasn't in any of the news reports yesterday. And I thought this was a huge deal that they're proposing this.
Well, it is a huge deal. And of the many, many issues out there, clearly we have to make sure that people are confident that when they cast their vote is accurately counted. And I think what this bill also addresses is the absurdity that in America you have secretaries of state who are elected political people who are conducting elections and often co-chairs of the candidates whose election they are monitoring and regulating. And, and that is a conflict of interest that we should do away with.
It's just wrong. Catherine Harris and Ken Blackwell.
Right.
And Tom in Minneapolis is on the line. Hey, Tom, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. Yeah, Bernie, a couple things. I wanted to echo that one caller in Long Beach about the unemployment numbers. I also lived in Germany, and that is true that they pay out for 2 years, so they're counted, where here you fall off, so you're not counted. So our unemployment rate is equal to theirs, but, of course, they have a much stronger safety net. But what I wanted to talk about was on this framing of language, and you asked, you know, we have to address this widening income gap that just never seems to stop widening. And, of course, the silver bullet is the union decline. And the right wingers always demonize unions as socialist or communist. And my wife from Germany says, that's funny because they always talk about spreading democracy, and unions are what bring democracy into a workplace where you spend one-third of your life, 8 hours a day, you have no democracy or voice to vote on, you know, to represent your interests in a workplace. They should call it democracy lobbies or something, and change the name, just like we had to change the name liberal to progressive, change the name union to democracy lobby, because that's what it does.
Workplace democracy.
Yeah.
No, that's, Tom, you're absolutely right. And when we talk about the decline in the standard of living of the average American, that is absolutely traceable, I think, to the decline in trade unions in this country, who not only protect their own members, but by raising a higher level of compensation, force employers to pay higher wages to non-union people as well. When you don't have somebody, a group of people there, fighting for workers, then the whole level of compensation and benefits declines, and that is what we're seeing in this country.
Yeah, that is the direct link right there.
There really is.
Right, straight through. Thank you very much for the call, Tom. Good to hear from you. John in Shreveport, Louisiana on the line. Hey, John.
Hey, Mr. Tom. I got a quick question here for you. Yesterday, you said that the Democrats were manipulating the voting machines to affect the results in elections in the South.
No, I didn't say that. I said that the Democrats had a history in the South back in the early part of the last century of rigging elections and being unfair in elections, and therefore the Republicans should be just as worried about hackable voting machines as the Democrats are, because both parties are capable of fraud. That was my point.
Okay, I don't think you said I do not recall you saying in the last century.
Well, I'm sorry I wasn't precise enough.
Well, okay,
then
I apologize
for
the way I came off in asking this question, and I retract my therefore what I would have said, I didn't say. But,
all right. John, we're gonna move along. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it. Jared in Michigan's on the line. Hey, Jared, what do you have here for Congressman Sanders?
Hi, you guys. How are you doing today?
Good.
Good.
Good. I was wondering on a state-to-state issue here in the wonderful state of Michigan. We had the State of the State address a while back, and our Democratic governor has stated that she would propose, I believe it was $2 billion in bonds. And these bonds were going to go to education. $175 for elementary per child and like $225 per high school student.
Jared, we've got about 30 seconds.
So. Yep, and it was amazing to me, if you could just, you know, enlighten me on this, is that a Republican, Ken Sikkema, came on and said this is absolutely irresponsible to borrow now and pay later. Isn't this what we're doing?
I thought he apparently hasn't been talking to the President of the United States. Is
that
your point,
Jared?
That's
what I thought.
Or Mr. Greenspan. That is a mind-boggling one there, Jared. That's, oh, my goodness. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders, his website, by the way, bernie.house.gov. And you can see on there his entire, shall we call it, interaction, Bernie,
yes.
with Mr. Greenspan. It's absolutely marvelous. Tom Hartman program, 10 minutes before the hour.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us, our Brunch with Bernie segment, brought to you in part by Small Dog Electronics, smalldog.com, 1-800-511-MAX. Just a few show notes very quickly. In the next hour, I will be singing opera with a political overtone. We're also going to have our Best of the Rest of the News segment with the editors of a couple of the top progressive websites on the Internet. And the next three Tuesdays on Air America Radio, I'll be filling in for Randy Rhodes. So just getting that announcement stuff out of the way. Okay, Bernie, let's go back to the telephone lines here. We have a couple of callers. See if we can get them in quickly. Alan in Alabama on the line. Hey, Alan, you're live with Congressman Sanders.
Yes, what's going to happen when we can't pay our debt to China? And also, is democracy and communism meeting the middle ground, something called feudalism?
Alan raises a very important issue, is that when we have a $7 trillion national debt, more and more of that debt is being purchased by China and Japan. And there is a growing concern about the political leverage that those countries will have over our policies with their ownership of that debt. Alan raises a very important issue.
Yeah, and Saudi Arabia owns a big chunk of it, too, don't they? Own about 7% of our debt, something
yeah.
like that. It's quite remarkable. Okay, Patrick in Georgia is on the line. Hey, Patrick, welcome to the program.
Can you hear me, Tom?
I can.
All right. Hey, Congressman Sanders, first off, thank you for cutting to the truth there with Greenspan. But my question is this, in response to the caller earlier, who said election reform was one of the biggest issues. I would tend to disagree with that. And I'd like the congressman's view on, I feel both sides polarize and limit the choices we give voters. And both sides are prone to corruption and have been long into this decade. So how do you solve the problem then of politicians being in office too long and getting corrupted through the political system and the power that comes along with that? How do we, you know, I hear a lot of times, people when they're trying to get
we've only got about 30 seconds here left, Patrick.
Patrick
so
raises
let me
a very important. Patrick, good question. I think the answer is real campaign finance reform, which does away with the enormous advantages that incumbent politicians have over those people who don't have a lot of money and want to challenge them. If we limit the amount of money that can be spent in an election and level the playing field, I think you're going to have a lot of good, ordinary, working class, middle class people coming up and wanting to run for office and winning if they're not going to be outspent 10 to 1.
Getting back, because right now it costs a seat for the Senate is $6 or $8 million.
You got to be increasingly, and I think Patrick is making this point, you have to be a millionaire yourself or beholden to very wealthy people. Patrick, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, I've dropped him, but
that
was his point.
That's a very important point. That speaks to the need for real campaign finance reform. And we're seeing some of that at the statewide level.
Good. Thanks. Bernie Sanders, thanks for being with us today, Bernie.
My pleasure. Bye.
Bye now.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded? Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on radio stations from California to North Carolina, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, streaming around the planet on radiopower.org, White Rose Society, Live 365's American FM, on cable systems in 29 states, on cable radio network. Welcome back to our program. TomHartman.com, the website, if you want to drop into our chat room, where Detective Brodka is trying to pass around rumors. It's just, Mike, it ain't fair, you know, trying to confuse people like that. Anyhow, if you want to drop into our chat room, TomHartman.com, click live chat, it'll get you there. And if you want to call the program, our number, 1-866, toll-free number, all across the United States, and increasingly all around the world. We now have listeners regularly, every weekly stats that we're looking at, listeners in over 116 countries every week. 1-866-889-8894. If you happen to live in one of those countries, we had a caller from France a couple of weeks ago. If you happen to live in one of those countries, you can't dial a toll-free number. 1-802-229-2288. But 1-866-889-8894. Anyhow, this morning we're sitting down doing show prep. I mean, you know, part of the show is put together the day before. It's what are the issues, what are the things. But an awful lot of putting the show together is done in the 5 or 6 hours before we go on the air, and at noon Eastern time. And so we really start show prep around 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning. And usually check out the progressive websites, Buzzflash, Common Dreams, you know, what's the op-ed news, what's going on with, you know, what's out there in the blogosphere, what's the news, look at the New York Times online, the Wall Street, the Washington Post, and LA Times and whatnot. And, you know, just, you know, because I, after all, it is a news-driven show. And I also subscribe to the Wall Street Journal. And this morning I sat down and for breakfast, I say, you know, I read the journal over breakfast. And I'm sitting here reading the Wall Street Journal, and it's just page after page after page. And I turned to Louise and I said, we don't need to do any more show prep. I've got the whole thing here. I've got 5 hours worth of radio right here in today's Wall Street Journal. And what's so amazing about it is when the wealthy and powerful corporate elite in America talks to itself, when they talk to each other, and they do so candidly, they just, you know, lay it out. It can be breathtaking. And I suspect, you know, most of my listeners probably don't read the Wall Street Journal. And so this isn't certainly meant to be an ad for them. I am not paid by them. In fact, I have to pay my $50 a year, whatever it is, for the subscription to it. Nor would I want to be a paid shill for the Wall Street Journal. But the point is that sometimes you learn the most by listening to the people who are on the other side. And I have a couple of things I want to share with you today from this. Without going any blithering on anymore about that. This, first of all, there's an article on page three about Negroponte to be intelligence chief. Just two little clips out of this. Further, Mr. Negroponte's human rights record will likely raise questions. Mr. Negroponte was the ambassador to Honduras when its military government ran a death squad financed and partially trained by the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency. Now, other newspapers are saying, well, there's been checkered past, or, you know, and they use euphemisms, or they say it's alleged. I mean, here it is. Just he was there. Critics have accused Mr. Negroponte of turning a blind eye to the death squad. And then they talk about it in Iraq. About the fact that, you know, people have been criticizing the United States for bringing Saddam's torturers back. Yes, the torture rooms are open again. And who's staffing them? Well, surprise, surprise, here, I'll read it from the Wall Street Journal. In Iraq, Mr. Negroponte backed Interim Prime Minister Iyad Alawi's efforts to crack down on the insurgency by using harsh measures such as mass arrests and martial law and restocking the country's security services with former Baathists. A recent Human Rights Watch report found, quote, the abuse, torture, and mistreatment of detainees by Iraqi security forces to be routine and commonplace, end quote. From today's Wall Street Journal. Here's where it gets even stranger, though. The two big stories in the journal today that are going to affect our lives, I mean, that affect you and me. This is the rubber hits the road stuff. Both front page stories. The first on class action lawsuits. George W. just had his little signing ceremony. And this a very well-written article by David Rogers and Monica Langley. The journal does have some of the, I mean, they're I'm telling you, their editorial page is right-wing crackpot stuff. But in their writing, they actually have some very, very competent writers and some of the best in the business, in my opinion. Congress sent the story here. Now, just get this. The headline, Bush set to sign landmark bill on class actions. The subhead, law aims to curb ability to shop for state courts, semicolon, a victory for business lobby. It's like, our side won. Isn't it cool? They're saying. And in fact, there's a pulled quote is where, you know, you've got in the middle of a story type, you know, that's much larger rather than the regular 12 point size type. It's like 20, 24 point, 26 point type. And it actually spans two columns and it pops out of the page. It says the legislation was hailed by industries from tobacco to drugs and technology. Cigarette companies have become some of the most high profile defendants in class action suits. And they, in this article, David Rogers and Monica Langley really did their homework and present a lot of stuff about this issue that even I was unaware of, and I thought I was pretty well educated about this stuff. First of all, it opens, Congress sent President Bush a landmark bill that will reshape the American legal landscape. They go on to point out, hoping to boost its tort reform agenda, the White House has slated a signing ceremony for this morning. Well, that's already happened. And now here we are in the second paragraph of the article. The victory belongs foremost to the business lobby, which has spent millions of dollars in a 7-year campaign to prevent plaintiff lawyers from shopping among local jurisdictions in search of big awards. And then they go on to note there are larger implications to this. And this is very much the case. The bill could embolden business. Right, Rogers and Langley. The bill could embolden business to push the Republican-controlled Congress for additional changes to the nation's court system. The next item on the business agenda is toughening standards on consumer bankruptcies. So right now they're setting it up so a whole bunch of people who have been injured by, say, a tobacco company or a drug manufacturer or car manufacturer can't get together and sue in a state court. Instead, they have to go through the federal courts. Now, what's the big significance of this, people ask? You know, so what? It's going to the federal courts instead of the state courts. Well, the big difference, the really big difference, the reason why these things really so much should be at the local level is, well, again, I'll quote to you from the Wall Street Journal. Federal judges are appointed for life, while some state judges are elected officials. See, here's how it works. The idea is you want your judges to, on the one hand, have a relative level of independence and autonomy, and that's you know, particularly in the federal courts, the Supreme Court, for example, you want them appointed for life, so they don't have to worry about kowtowing to politicians or running for re-election or things like that. But when it comes to the judges who are deciding whether or not your environment, your air is going to be clean, whether or not a corporation is going to build a sludge incinerator in your neighborhood and do so in a way that doesn't have proper pollution protections, whether or not consumers are harmed. When it comes to judges who are deciding life and death matters for you and me, wouldn't it be better to have those be folks who are like local and accountable? People that, if they really get outrageous, you can vote those bums out of office. That they have to sit in the same restaurants with the rest of us and look at us. I mean, I'll tell you, I've lived in big states and small states. We lived in Georgia. We lived in Atlanta for years. I live now in Vermont here in Montpelier. Walk into town, have lunch at or dinner at Sarducci's at this little restaurant in town, and here comes Ann Cummings or Bill Doyle, you know, our state senators, walking around shaking hands. Hey, how you doing? Or you see them at the sitting at the table. You can just walk over and say, hey, Bill, I think we should do something about voting, you know, voting machine reform. Or let's talk about corporate personhood. And he'll say, fine, pull up a chair. I'm not making the, I mean, I've actually done this. Just as Joe Citizen. It's not like, hey, Senator, I'm a famous talk show host. He doesn't know. I live in town. Don't you think that we should have some local level of accountability? Well, the large multinational corporations really don't want that level of accountability. And as the right-wingers and their corporate shills increasingly pack the federal courts with people like Patricia Owen, I mean, these extremist judges that George W. has again referred to the Senate for confirmation, who just have this complete opinion that the government should have no business defending we the people. It's like, you know, they must be completely ignorant of American history, or they just don't understand, you know, the idea of this country was that the government is we the people, and we put it together in order to ensure life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness for we the people. Thank you very much. So anyhow, they make it harder for us to sue if we're harmed. And next, the journal article says they're going to go after consumer bankruptcies. We'll get to that a little bit later. Other business priorities, such as limiting medical malpractice suits and asbestos litigation, they note, are also on the hit list, on the hit parade. The Republicans are just so excited, you know. Hey, Halliburton has a $4 billion debt because of all these people who are dying from mesothelioma from asbestos. And, well, you know, it's frivolous litigation, according to the president's State of the Union speech. That'll be next. You mark my words. Joan Claybrook now is quoted in the Wall Street Journal. She's the head of Public Citizen, a group Ralph Nader started. She said, there has been a relentless attack by business to get rid of accountability. They don't want any disclosure of misdeeds. The Consumer Federation of America said the bill essentially denies consumers access to a uniquely important legal tool against corporate wrongdoing by virtually wiping out state class action suits. And then the journal adds, after they've said this, some corporate executives expect there now will be far fewer class action cases tried in state courts. That's, you know, our side won, they're saying. It's amazing. 20 minutes past the hour.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
And it's not even Groundhog Day.
Well, that's true, cause you got me, baby, I got
you. Let's see, Groundhog Day, that's that day that a furry rodent comes out and tells us the future. Seemed like that was also the day it was a better joke on Groundhog Day. Back to class action bills. This is technology companies. Again, the Wall Street Journal article story. The legislation to limit class actions to federal courts was immediately hailed by a variety of industries, from tobacco to drugs to technology.
Surprise, surprise.
For drug companies, the legislation, they note, won't eliminate all legal woes, but it will likely alleviate the pressure in certain kinds of cases.
They note plaintiffs do sometimes seek to group together some types of cases to increase the pressure and potential liability for company. Let's do away with that. That's my comment, not the Wall Street Journal's. Technology companies, they note, historically have complained most about shareholder class action suits, and these are already generally litigated in federal courts. But, notes the Wall Street Journal, tech companies increasingly are being dragged into state courts for consumer class actions over issues such as product defects and misleading advertising. So here we have Bruce Sewell, interesting name, for a lawyer. General counsel for Intel Corp, which lobbied for the legislation and which has also been sued in Madison County, Illinois, for allegedly misleading the public about the power of Intel's Pentium 4 microprocessors. What does he have to say about this? We believe this is the right thing to do. Yeah. So how did this thing make its way through Congress? Did the Democrats stand up? Did they have a spine? Did anybody stand up and say, no, this is the wrong thing? Well, the Wall Street Journal tells us, final passage came on a 279-149 House vote. That means a bunch of Democrats voted for this thing, which followed on a 72-26 roll call in the Senate last week, which means a bunch of Democrats voted for it in the Senate as well. They add Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi, a California Democrat, dismissed the measure as a belated Valentine to corporate America. But 50 of her own Democrats supported the bill, despite bitter complaints from the party's labor supporters. Hey, it's not just labor that should worry about this. And they go on to say, and again, this is from this article in the Wall Street Journal, business donations were crucial to Republican victories last November. I mean, they are just so upfront about what they're about. It's really quite refreshing in a way, I suppose. Business donations were crucial to Republican victories last November, and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce made class action overhaul its signature issue in the 2004 campaign. Now, this is something I didn't know. Former Senate Democratic Leader Tom Daschle, who had helped to frustrate passage of a similar bill last summer, was targeted in last fall's election for supporters of an overhaul, contributing to his defeat for re-election for South Dakota. I had no idea that one of the main reasons they were able to nail Tom Daschle was because they had all these folks who wanted to get out from underneath the possibility of being sued by poor, helpless consumers. And Daschle was the one who was standing in the way. In fact, to a remarkable degree, the Wall Street Journal notes, the business lobby was able to set the tone of the debate with a steady drumbeat of anecdotes portraying wealthy trial lawyers making off at large settlements at the expense of not only corporations, but their customers. And yes, you've been hearing that drumbeat on TV and on right-wing talk radio and on and on. They say it's going to be harder to duplicate this strategy with medical malpractice or bankruptcy because there will be people with anecdotes of their own on the other side. I would say there's people with anecdotes of their own on the side of class action lawsuits. But apparently the word didn't get out. And again, I would say it's our media that failed in this regard. 29 minutes past the hour.
At laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, live on radio stations from coast to coast, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, streaming around the planet. On radiopower.org, whiterosesociety.org, Live 365's American FM, cable radio network in 29 states. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce openly acknowledged this week that it has spent more than $53 million in 2004 alone in efforts to lobby for this bill that we were just talking about in the last half hour. This bill that George W. Bush signed this morning that throws class action lawsuits into federal court, making it harder for you and me if we are harmed by corporate America to seek reparation for our harm. This was done, notes the Association of Trial Lawyers of America, over the vocal opposition from the National Conference of State Legislatures, 14 states' attorneys general, the Conference of Chief Justices, the Federal Judicial Conference, and Chief Justice Rehnquist of the United States Supreme Court, all of them opposed to this. A week after the Department of Justice handed down a damning indictment, I'm quoting from the news release here, of asbestos maker W.R. Grace, which alleged that that company and its executives knew their infamous Libby, Montana mine was releasing cancer-causing asbestos into the air and decided to keep the dangers secret from both workers and townspeople. Good luck suing now. Anyhow, it's time for our best of the rest of the news segment, where we get on the air with us a couple of editors of the top progressive websites, progressive publications out there on the internet, and occasionally in print as well, and some both. And in this case today, we have Michael Tomosky, the executive editor of the American Prospect. Hello, Michael.
Hi there.
And Jesse Lee, who's the online editor for the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, which is in a way I'd say a news source or a news vehicle. Really, you're more of a source of news, aren't you, Jesse?
Yeah. Well, I, the philosophy I have kind of for our online communications is that, you know, if the party says something, it's automatically partisan and could be dismissed. But the facts are on our side. So
there you go.
You know, my position is that what we need to do is just collect all the facts, collect all the tidbits, direct quotes from news sources, and just put them out there as much as possible.
Yeah. So the website for the American Prospect, of course, is prospect.org. What's the website? I don't have that written down here for the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee. Where do people find that, Jesse?
It's blog.dccc.org. No www on that.
Okay. Blog.dccc, as in Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, .org.
Exactly. And it's called the stakeholder.
The stakeholder. Great. Great. Well done. Okay. Well, let's start out. Michael Tomosky. Am I pronouncing your name right, by the way, Michael?
Well, Tomosky.
Tomosky. Okay. Thank you. Yeah.
It's
best that I say it right.
You're
close. Let's do it right. Michael Tomosky, the executive editor of the American Prospect. Prospect.org, www.prospect.org. In your publication, just in general, in your sense of the news, I mean, you know, regardless of your publication cycle, here we are, it's Friday, it's the end of the week. But what, in your mind, and based on the emails you're getting and the feedback that you're getting from listeners and whatnot, what do you think are the top issues or stories of this past week that really not only had some consequence, but may have some lasting consequence?
Well, I think that the Social Security debate may have changed, unfortunately, in a way that we wouldn't be so crazy about on two fronts. I think that Greenspan's testimony gave it some potential momentum. Let me say potential momentum. that it didn't have previous to that. Obviously, mm-hmm. Greenspan is regarded by these people, for good reasons or bad, as the oracle of wisdom. And it was an odd thing because, as some have pointed out, as Krugman pointed out today, and the New York Times pointed out in an editorial today.
He's like a party hack.
Well, yeah, there is that. Definitely a party hack. You know, made the way for Bush's tax cuts when even, you know, most people close to him knew that deep down he really didn't believe that was good fiscal policy. Yeah. And again, if you look at his remarks from Wednesday, his testimony, he just said the sentence that he's generally in favor of the idea of privatization, but he didn't say anything factual to support the contention that he favored privatization. And in fact, he said some things that would be contrary to that contention. But he got the headline that he knew he was going to produce with his testimony, and it helps this plan along. Now, the other thing is Bush signaling a willingness to compromise on this by raising the Social Security tax rate and maybe by doing a couple of other things. Thus far, the Democrats, even some that you wouldn't normally expect, some who have gone along with Bush on some things before, like Max Baucus from Montana, have held the line and stood pat that they weren't going to be a party to this. But if Bush is starting to compromise, you just watch. In a few weeks, people like Baucus, Lieberman, are going to start saying, well, maybe I should rethink.
Yeah, well, you know, Greenspan was initiated by Ayn Rand in her apartment in the 1950s
right.
in New York City into the cult of objectivism.
Right.
And has always identified with that. I mean, he's beyond conservative. He's an objectivist, and
he's never,
to the best of my knowledge, in his career, has never backed away from his position that Social Security is socialism and should not exist at all. So I'm not surprised.
Right. That's what he thinks.
Yeah,
that's what he thinks.
And he represents a significant constituency, maybe 5-10% of the American population who subscribe to these libertarian and ultra-conservative ideals that, you know, the only role of government is to provide for a military and police, and that's it, end of discussion. And so you think that the big issue or the big story of this last week is that the opposition to Bush's camel's nose under the tent, the privatization, it may be crumbling. That's really interesting, particularly given that Jesse Lee is on with us, who's the online editor for the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, blog.dccc.org. Jesse, you're pretty closely in touch, I would guess, with the Democrats in Congress. What's your sense on that?
I'd say that was a pretty big development, although to an extent, you know, the players were already kind of in place, you know, and everybody kind of knew what Greenspan was going to say. And the idea that Bush going out there on the road and say, oh, Greenspan likes it, and that's going to convert, you know, all the elderly people worried about their Social Security, I'm not so sure. To me, the actual bigger development was DeLay coming out yesterday and saying, no, we will not raise the cap, and because that's a raise in taxes. And, of course, this was the one spot where a lot of Republicans like Lindsey Graham thought there might be room for compromise with Democrats.
Yeah.
And DeLay came out immediately, said, no way, no how. And, you know, the way I put it after when we posted that was he's kind of dragging the Republicans out of the mainstream with a knife to their throat in broad daylight.
Well, these guys, and ultimately, it's funny. I had to give a speech last night in a town about an hour from here, and we were driving over there listening to Sean Hannity, of all people. It's about all there was. And he's going on and on and on about how they shouldn't remove the cap. And this guy calls in and gets, you know, in this conversation with him. And I keep wanting the guy to say, Sean, aren't you an advocate of flat taxes? I mean, you know, because he has in the past. He's always, you know, Steve Forbes, the flat tax.
Everybody should pay the same tax rate. You know, everybody paid 17% tax rate. Be no problem. Bill Gates paid the same rate as you and me.
And if we lifted the cap entirely, it's a flat tax. Why haven't the Democrats grabbed on this and said, well, okay, we'll go along with a flat tax in this case?
Well, I think the Democrats are still kind of sifting around. They haven't come out with, you know, a counter plan, which would essentially just be a Bush punching bag at this point.
But, I mean, the Republicans are saying we want this thing to be as regressive as possible. It's anybody who earns over $90,000, hey, they don't have to pay a penny into it after that.
Right. Well, here's the thing about the cap is basically, it would have been the same reaction as Tom DeLay had to Bush kind of opening himself up to it, which is, oh, they're raising taxes. Oh, that's all Democrats want to do is raise taxes.
But Bush put it out.
The conversation's off of Bush's terrible plan, and it's about how Democrats just want to raise taxes.
Yeah, but didn't Bush say this week that he was willing to entertain the option of lifting the cap?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And, you know,
and DeLay just told him to stuff it.
As a result of him coming out and, you know, kind of putting that forth instead of us, he got Tom DeLay's wrath instead of us.
Interesting. So it was a trial balloon that didn't go anywhere. Is that your take on it as well, Michael?
I'm not so sure. I guess so. but, you know, if George Bush really wants this, I think even Tom DeLay can be brought to heel. And you never know with these guys what's a feint and what's real. I mean, I'm sure that Tom DeLay is serious about this because from his perspective, that's a tax increase, and he's not going to let his Congress do anything that remotely resembles a tax increase.
Well, it'll be a tax increase for him because he earns more than $90,000 a year.
Yeah.
So, it's the
old exterminator.
There you go. Yeah. So now, Michael Tomasky, editor of the American Prospect, executive editor of the American Prospect, you had mentioned a second major story. And I'm sorry, it's the Social Security just blew it out of my brain. What was it that you said was the other?
When did I do that?
Oh, maybe you didn't then. Okay. In that case, then let me go back to Jesse and ask Jesse.
I can come up with one.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll come to that. But let me give Jesse a shot at this. Jesse, in your blog, blog.dccc.org, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee's blog, you being the online editor of it. Jesse Lee, what in your mind was the big story of the week?
Well, there's three stories really that we've kind of focused on, and I think are just kind of getting started. One is, of course, the Jeff Gannon thing, which you know is obviously really only just getting going.
Yeah, it's interesting. The national media is just now beginning to touch this thing. We've been ranting about this for weeks on the air here on this program, and you guys blogging about it, but.
Exactly. And Representative Slaughter is, you know, just getting more and more frustrated, coming out more and more publicly. I think you'll hear more from the Democrats on this issue next week, too.
Yeah.
Another thing is Rep. George Miller has been just like a laser on this Walmart Department of Labor deal that was in the New York Times. I'm sure you've touched on that.
Yeah. Well, yes. It's actually my stack for the day. Yes. Oh, no, actually, 2 days ago, I did a whole hour on that. You mean where the Department of Labor told Walmart, by the way, in the future, if we think you might be violating the law, we'll call you up, we'll tell you in advance that we're going to come and inspect, we'll give you a chance to clean and sanitize everything, fix things up, destroy records, and then we'll come knock on the door and ask for permission to come in. That's what you're talking about, right? Yeah. It wouldn't be, I mean, I'm sure every crack cocaine dealer in America would love to have the same deal.
Exactly.
Anyhow, okay, so there's that. You said then there's the third one?
Yeah, there's one. The story that really caught my eye this morning was that I don't know if you guys are familiar with Dan Senor, I think his name is. He was a spokesman for the Pentagon over in Iraq. Then he went over to Bush's campaign team. He kind of did the rounds in Spin Alley during the debates. He was also the one that allegedly helped Alawi with his speech when he came here.
Right.
And now he has just told the Jerusalem Post that Ahmed Chalabi, quote, has a good chance of getting the job, referring to the prime minister.
Yeah, Ahmed Chalabi, the Iranian spy who was inside the Pentagon for all those years.
Exactly. And he something funny is going on there because it's now between Chalabi and one other, you know, essentially Islamic law proponent.
Yeah.
And Chalabi is acting like he's got it wrapped up.
I'm telling you,
it seems preposterous that he would have support since he's so unpopular amongst citizenry.
He's blackmailing Bush. He's blackmailing Bush or Rumsfeld. I mean, there was that point. I mean, this is a guy who was convicted of bank fraud in Jordan, sentenced to 27 years of hard labor, fled the country, went to England, was working for the CIA, came over here, started feeding us all this nonsense. We were paying him $300,000 a month, $340,000, as I recall, some outrageous amount of money. And it turns out he was feeding intelligence to Iran all the time. He gets outed. He flees to Iran, fearing for his life. And then, you know, he makes a few phone calls, and now he's back. And I just, this guy is a survivor, and I am convinced that all that time that he spent inside the Pentagon, hanging out with Doug Feith and Wolfowitz and Rummy and Cheney, that he knows where the bodies are buried, and he's blackmailing these guys. Otherwise, he'd be toast.
Right. Well, something funny is going on. We keep hearing, well, he's fallen out of favor since it turned out he was spying for Iran.
Yeah.
Well, you know, in my book, if someone's spying for Iran, the country that you're identifying as the biggest threat, you don't just stop showing up to dinner parties with them.
Right.
You might do something about it.
And you don't put them in charge of the country that you just invaded and took over.
Exactly.
So. Yeah, okay. Michael.
I just want to say, I mean, let's just imagine in this Chalabi case and in the Jeff Gannon case, let's imagine that both of those things had happened. With a Democratic administration in power.
Oh, if Bill Clinton had been in office. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
It would be the end of the republic.
It would. They would literally be tried for treason.
Yeah, yeah.
Literally be tried for treason.
Yeah, and by the way, those are only...
nothing to say about this.
Those are only two of about 30
Fox
things.
Fox News hasn't found the Jeff Gannon story very interesting at all.
Yeah, yeah. Here's a sex scandal in the White House. Not, you know, and plus the stuff which I have just, you know, you just see these little peeps occasionally about Ken Mellman, the head of the RNC, being outed by one of the gay websites, Karl Rove being outed, the possibility thereof. I mean, all the and it's not like, gee, it's terrible somebody's gay. It's like these guys make their career bashing gays, and now there's and Gannon with his it's just incredible. Well, we got to wrap this thing up. We've got about 30 seconds here. Michael, what do you see? In fact, we don't even have 30 seconds. Let's wrap it up on the other side of this break. If you guys can stick around for 5 minutes, because I would like to hear from both of you what you see coming up in the next week. And I think we've had an interesting conversation here. I enjoy it. We're talking with Michael Tomasky, the executive editor of the American Prospect, prospect.org, and Jesse Lee, the online editor for the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, blog.dccc.org. It's Tom Hartman. 10 minutes before the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
The polar caps are melting at a rapid pace. Ocean levels soon could harm the human race. But they have got no proof their theories are correct. Our corporations don't get enough respect. So come on.
Slash it!
Slash another little piece of the forest.
Oh, slash another little piece of the forest, yes. It's
burn another little piece of Brazil. It feels so good.
It's the billionaires for Bush.
Cut another little piece of the forest down, baby.
Oh, you know, it feels so good. Yes, indeed. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. The Tom Hartman Radio Program. We're talking with Michael Tomasky, executive editor of the American Prospect, prospect.org online, and Jesse Lee, the online editor of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, blog.dccc.org. And we have about 2.5 minutes here, guys, so I would like to get your take. We'll go to you first, Michael. What do you see coming on the horizon? What's your sense of what the next week is going to be bringing in terms of hot news and interesting events?
Well, there's the budget debate has started, and it's gonna kick into gear here in the next couple of weeks anyway. What else? And there's a bankruptcy bill, another bad bill that just cleared a committee in the Senate.
Yeah.
Another bill they've done for their corporate contributors, and that's gonna work its way onto the Senate floor. And I would say, I'm gonna be watching the Gannon story to see. The degree to which the major papers continue to follow this.
Do you think that story is going to go deeper or higher?
The question of whether the White House knew about all this stuff that he was up to.
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, is it going to go deeper or higher than just this poor schmuck? You know, just the one guy. Okay, right. Jesse Lee, online editor, Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, blog.dccc.org. Jesse, your thoughts on this next week?
Well, I would certainly agree with all those. I think the big jumping off point for the Gannon story is going to be the fact that we now know that his kind of flim-flam news organization, Cal News, did not even exist when he was first admitted into the White House.
Yeah.
So this was a guy with no journalistic background, no publication.
So you're thinking this story has some legs. This one's going to stick around, too.
Well, it's just it's got that word propaganda.
Yeah, imprinted all over it. Once again, coming out of this White House. What a surprise to all of us.
Right.
Okay, Michael Tomasky. Am I saying it right again, Michael?
Yeah, that's
yep,
great.
Michael Tomasky, executive editor of the American Prospect, prospect.org. Check it out. Jesse Lee, online editor, Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, blog.dccc.org. Check that out. Thank you both for being with us today. I do appreciate it.
And you,
hey, have a good one. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. We're going to do a contest. The contest is going to be for a Tom Hartman radio program bumper sticker and a Tom Hartman radio program refrigerator magnet. We have some really cool, they're actually pretty cool, you know, bumper stickers and refrigerator magnets. We're going to send one of each to whoever wins this contest. And it's a question, and I'm going to give you a few tips here. I had told you at the beginning of the first hour of the program here 2 hours ago that I was going to sing opera today. This isn't opera, really, but here's the setup. George W. Bush, actually Karl Rove. Karl Rove has said on the record that he modeled his presidency or the Bush presidency after the McKinley presidency, William McKinley, who was president in the late 1900s. And William McKinley, of course, was the one, the USS Maine, the whole bit, you know, who declared the Spanish-American War. And his opponents said that he declared this war. This is where we seized the Philippines and we seized Cuba and whatnot. It was a terrible loss of life. It went on much longer than anybody expected. It was far worse than anybody expected. And, and this was the height of the robber baron era, as the rich were getting richer and the poor were getting poorer. And on it goes, right? I mean, the parallels are just absolutely startling. And as this war was going, a famous American wrote a pastiche, an anti-war version of the Battle Hymn of the Republic. It was called the Battle Hymn of the Republic Revised. And one of our listeners in Santa Fe, and by the way, we're going on KRSN, I believe it is, in Los Alamos, New Mexico, on March 7th for our Santa Fe listeners. Anyhow, one of our listeners in Santa Fe shared this with me, so please exempt yourself from the contest, Santa Fe Spitfire. The question is, who wrote this song? And I'm going to, with apologies to those of you who have perfect pitch and know how to sing, I'm going to sing one verse from the revised, now this was during the Spanish-American War, right? So this was a little more than 100 years ago. Who was the famous American who wrote this verse that I'm going to sing in just a second for the revised edition of the Battle Hymn of the Republic?
Mine eyes have seen the launching of the orgy of the sword. He is searching out the hoardings where the stranger's wealth is stored. He hath loosed his fateful whitings, and with woe and death has scored. His lust is marching on.
Okay, that's enough to make you never want to hear anybody sing ever again as long as you live, isn't it? And I even started off key. In any case, mine eyes have seen the launching of the orgy of the sword. He's searching out the hoardings where the stranger's wealth is stored. See, it was a war about resources. He hath loosed his fateful lightnings, and with woe and death has scored. His lust is marching on. Who's the famous American who wrote that? Got it published in newspapers all across the country. And you call in 1-866-889-8894. The first person to correctly identify the author of that verse to the revised edition of the Battle Hymn of the Republic, we will put you on the air, and you will be the winner. Oh, and it looks like we have a winner already. And a couple of other phone lines here lit up, but let's go to our winner, Roy, in Rio Rancho. Roy, you're not the one who sent this thing to me, are you?
No, sir.
Okay.
No, sir.
Okay.
However, and actually, I didn't know that he had written it. It was a blind pig guess because I had just got through downloading Smedley's War's Racket book.
Right. Which came out of that.
And that tied into a link to Mark Twain's War Prayer.
Yep.
And I ran a copy and I just sent it over to a young man that I know that's over in Iraq that kind of feels our way and is
Yeah, Mark Twain wrote a lot of anti-war stuff as a result of the Spanish-American War. And this
and the Spanish-American War, they also that was where they came up with the 45 caliber pistol.
Stop
those hucks in the Philippines because they just kept coming at us because they didn't want us in our land, in their land.
Interesting. I didn't know that. Well, you learn something every day. Okay, Mark Twain. Mark Twain, Samuel Clemens. Mark Twain was the author of that. And Roy and Rio Rancho, you have won the contest. And I'm going to put you on hold so that Ira can get your address and all that kind of stuff. And we will send you a bumper sticker and a refrigerator magnet. Be sure when you get it in the mail not to put it near a computer because the refrigerator magnet is a magnet. And so don't slap it on the side of your computer. It's not a good plan. I'm going to stick you on hold here. And okay, well done. Well done, Roy and Rio Rancho, New Mexico. And Mark Twain. 1-866-889-8894. We've got a bunch of other news here, too, but let's take a few phone calls here and just see what's on people's minds. Mike in Orlando, Florida, on the line. Hey, Michael.
Hi, Tom.
Oh, it's Michael Toth. Toth, yeah.
Sorry, the only opera I'm familiar with was Elmer Fudd when he sang Kill the Wabbit. Kill the Wabbit. Anyway.
There's a Wabbit. Yes, I the only way I can sing decently is to sing loudly, and then
I wanted your opinion on something.
Okay.
I thought that it might happen when Barbara Boxer was getting all the attention, and then she got a few thousand roses on Valentine's Day.
Yeah, like 5,000 or something.
Yeah, and all of a sudden Hillary Clinton's standing by her side. I'm just wondering how much of that has to do with everybody else getting jealous of the limelight and then just bending to whatever they need to.
Oh, I'm sure a lot of it does. But is that bad?
Yes and no. I think you need to have people in there, more people like Boxer, and get out the phonies who will just play to whatever is popular at the time.
Yeah.
And yes, it is a good thing, but is she going to change her colors again?
Yeah, I just, I have to say, I think that, you mean is Hillary going to change her colors again?
Yeah,
I just have to say, I'm not sure what her colors are. And I don't mean that as a criticism. I mean that she was her husband's wife for a long time. She was the first lady. And we know that she was in favor of a national health care policy of some sort. And that was, pretty much it. And she's run for the Senate and she's done a few things in the Senate. And we're starting to get a sense of who she is. But I think the vast majority of Americans, other than that she was, that long-suffering wife who really was rung through the ringer by the right wingers, don't have a sense of who Hillary is yet. And I frankly have to say that I'm among them. Perhaps if I lived in New York State, it would be different because she'd be in the local newspaper every day. But here in Vermont, we don't get the New York News. So I'm not going to blame her for saying, hey, Barbara Boxer's hot. I'm going to hop on the same train with her. In fact, I think that's smart politics. If she agrees philosophically with Boxer's positions, and if she does, then she just went up a notch in my mind, frankly.
Yeah. Hey, real quick,
I don't mind politicians playing, being politicians, as long as there is some consistency to what they're doing,
right.
some integrity to it. If they're going to grandstand, that's what they got to do. That's just the political reality. You got to do what you got to do to get on TV.
Hey, real quick on that Ohio bill.
Yeah.
I wonder if it shows just how confident they think they may be in holding power in Ohio for quite some time by making a bill like that or even presenting it.
Yeah, well, it's been withdrawn. So,
has it?
Yeah, it's my understanding, yeah.
Oh, well, that's good news.
Yeah. So, Michael, thank you for the call, and thank you for keeping up our archives.
All right, you're welcome.
Audio archives at tomhartman.com, which people can click to get to off our message board, where Michael goes through regularly and pulls out topic clips and has been for a year and a half, 2 years, something like that.
It's been over two, I think. Now.
Yeah, it's quite some time. And maintaining them, storing them, thank you, Michael.
I'm doing it as we speak, actually.
Okay, great. Well, here's a good one.
All right. Take care, Tom.
Thanks, Mike. Good to hear from you. 16 minutes past the hour, 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number, Brian in California on the line. Hey, Brian, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. I actually just drove across the country from New Jersey, and I just wanted to make a couple of quick observations.
That's a long haul.
Oh, yeah, it was 48 hours. It was a lot of fun, but I can't get
48 hours. What were you doing? Boy, this flashes back to my college days. I mean,
we were flying.
Oh, I see. you were driving.
Yeah, but yeah. we were going fast enough that I guess if we had wings, we would be flying.
Were you taking turns driving or something?
Yeah,
or
just... there were three of us.
Ah, okay.
So
that's a little different. We did a cross country adventure when I was a teenager, and we best not talk about that. So anyway,
Just two quick observations though. We drove through the South, went through Texas, and Texas was huge. But I saw a lot of Kerry bumper stickers, and I saw a lot of non-George W. Bush paraphernalia down there, all big W's with crossouts, and I was pretty surprised by that.
Yeah.
Also, something that caught my eye that I thought was funny: George Bush Highway was the only toll road throughout the entire trip. After we get out of the Northeast Corridor, and it was kind of funny. I thought it was ironic. It said, last free exit, and I was like, oh, I guess people aren't the only guys losing their rights here. I guess exits are too.
Irony lives. Yes.
Yes.
I remember driving on that, and the last time I was down in, it's in Dallas, isn't it?
Yes.
Through there? Yeah. Yep. I was in Dallas doing a book signing a year or so ago, and I didn't recall it being a toll road. Maybe they recently made it one, or maybe it was then, and I just didn't notice. But it was. It's named after his father, isn't it? Isn't it?
Yeah.
George
H. W. Bush. It's not George W. Bush. It's just George Bush. But it cost me 40 cents. Dang it.
Yeah, there you go. Well, you got to support the Bush family one way or another.
Well, it's good to hear your voice, Tom, and I'll pick you up in New Jersey a week from now. So.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
Travel safely, Brian.
Thanks
for the call. Good to hear from you. Remarkable. And so now the Senate is moving along. We started in the last hour talking about the change to tort reform, not tort reform. This is all falling under the rubric of tort reform, under the overall banner. One of the reasons why these guys love to call this tort reform is because 9 out of 10 Americans, probably 99 out of 100 Americans, don't know what a tort is, other than that maybe it's a German pastry. A tort is a damage which has legal consequences. Somebody has been harmed, and there is a legal side effect to it. And at least that's my understanding. I'm not an attorney. I mean, maybe my definition is wrong. I haven't looked it up in the dictionary. It's just my understanding. If there's a lawyer out there who can do a better job or somebody who understands what a tort is better, please call us and let us know at 1-866-889-8894. But in any case, this whole, tort reform thing, really what it is underneath it all, the whole judicial reform, the whole let's reform our court system, what it's really all about is shifting more and more power away from we the people, away from individuals, away from consumers, away from families, away from children, and to multinational corporate power and the politicians in their employ. And, of course, in the last hour we talked about how they've done this now with class action lawsuits. The tobacco companies are now happy. The drug companies are happy. Microsoft is happy. Everybody's smiling today. All the fat cats. Next, bankruptcy. You just watched. 20 minutes past the hour.
842-8272.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier. Just so long as I'm the dictator.
You gave him the old, stay the course, I'm your man. Why, he'll flip-flop ya.
Oh, George, you razzle-dazzled us.
No strength to lead, yes, this you feared. While soldiers' jobs and surplus disappeared. Gave him the old, never yet devil speak. Yes, with both swindled him.
Yes.
No one could hear the truth above the roar.
Now there's a guy who actually can sing, eh?
And though your debating was a stinker, they bought it all, hook, line, and sinker. You razzle-dazzled home, and they gave you four more.
Yes, welcome back, my friend.
They're unable to practice their love with women all across this country.
I hear there's rumors on the internets. You cannot lead if you send mixed messages.
Yes. Welcome back to our program. 25 minutes past the hour. Folks in the chat room wanting to know about the Thomas Jefferson, about a ton of snow came off the roof of the building and has covered the area where Thomas was hanging out, although there are some steps and things there, and we're pretty sure he's hanging out under that. So now he has actually extra protection from predators. And up on the top of that snow, there's a little yellow snow, so somebody has been poking around up there. So that's the update on the mouse. Now for the update from Washington, D.C., Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service is on the line. Hey, Ellen.
Well, I'll tell you, they are doing an all-out court press on this class action bill that the president signed today. And, you know, he pulled out some woman that wanted to fix her TV. The lawyer got $22 million. Well, but what he didn't talk about is how much more difficult it is going to be for anybody to sue at this point. The other thing is that he said in his little speech today, there's more to do. Small business owners across America fear that one lawsuit could force them to close their doors for good. Then he talked about medical liability. And he said junk lawsuits drove the total cost of America's tort system of more than $240 billion a year last year. But you know what? I thought courts could throw out cases that they didn't think were justified.
Well, not only can they throw out cases that aren't justified, they can penalize attorneys and plaintiffs for bringing cases that aren't justified. There are laws against frivolous lawsuits.
And so, you know, it's, what can I say?
Yeah, it's another George W. He's razzle dazzling him again.
Now the president is going off to his trip to Europe, and he will be leaving on Sunday afternoon. He goes to Belgium. He is going to be meeting President Putin and in Europe. And it's interesting because Putin said today he's not sure that Iran is trying to build a nuclear weapon. And that Moscow is going to continue their nuclear cooperation with Tehran. So this is the guy that Mr. Bush, Tom, looked in the eye and knew he could trust.
Yeah. Not just knew he could trust, he saw his soul, did he say? Or he saw somebody who's...
Yeah, we saw each other's souls,
yeah,
please.
Yeah, soul
and
brothers.
He missed Carla Faye Tucker's soul after she converted to Christianity.
Yeah.
And found God, but he managed to...
But Putin was the head of the KGB, and Georgie's dad was head of the CIA, so maybe there was some sort of DNA thing there, you know?
Okay, just one other fast one for you, that Canada, under a lot of pressure from the drug companies, is now saying that they are trying to think about enactment of legislation which would cut off internet pharmacies and have a total ban on exports of price-controlled brand-name drugs. Not generic drugs, brand-name drugs.
Yeah. Is this happening at the federal level or in a particular province?
It is happening at the federal level with the health minister.
Wow. Oh, the health minister. So we're leaning on them, and they're starting to bend.
That's exactly right. The health minister said he's worried about the Canadian health system collapsing. I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think so either. It's amazing. Well, Ellen, thank you for the update. Thank you
You're
so
very
much.
Welcome.
Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, Washington, D.C. Thank you again. It's always great to hear from you. I appreciate these daily updates. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. 29 minutes.
For information, visit laborradio.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Gotta fight another fight. Gotta run another night. Get up, check it out. I'm on my way, don't feel right.
And welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, where tuning in is as easy as getting a White House press pass if you're a gay hooker. The Senate panel backs a bill to overhaul the bankruptcy process. I'm share this with you. First, though, Greg in California has been patiently waiting on the phone. Greg, thanks for your patience. I do appreciate it. Welcome to the program.
Not a problem. Hi, Tom.
What's up?
I just wanted to talk about Hillary Clinton and electronic voting and all that stuff.
Okay, go for it.
Last year, there was a point in time when there were three Senate bills. You know, we had Holt's bill, 2239, and then we eventually all of a sudden had Boxer, Graham, and Clinton all had their own respective bills.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the last one to defend Clinton because she had such a horrible offering. That bill that she had was heavily influenced by some lobbying group, and it had all sorts of loopholes in it. So I don't trust her on this issue.
Uh-huh.
But on the other hand, when the three senators finally combined their bills, Graham had Holt's bill, basically a photocopy of it.
Right.
Boxer had her own bill, and Hillary had hers. The three combined those bills. So, with respect to the caller a few minutes ago who wanted to propose that because Boxer's getting flowers and Hillary wants to be in the limelight, I don't think so. I think it's completely predictable that since they had a bill together last year that they'd have another one this year.
Yeah. Even though there may have been some differences of opinion about how it should have been done before, now they're getting together on this thing.
And I don't know that, I'm going to say I'm not a defender of Clinton's record as it regards to the electronic voting issue. And I don't know anybody who's looked closely at the bill that was submitted this week to know whether or not that's a good bill.
Yeah, I read the press release off Hillary's website on the air here yesterday, or pieces of it. You know, I mean, the I don't know if it's a press release or whatever you call it, the summary of the bill that's on her website. And some of the features were things that even went beyond things that I ever expected to see in a piece of legislation. I mean,
yeah.
You know, you go to jail for a year if you're a Secretary of State and you get involved in politics during an election cycle and you're the supervisor of elections. I thought, whoa, you know, or if you're the CEO of a voting machine company.
Yeah, I like the sounds of that stuff, but the sorts of things that she had in there before was a lot of wiggle room, which is the trouble that we've gotten into with AVA, which allows the election officials to interpret on a case-by-case basis how they place some of the rules within the bill.
Yeah, HAVA being the Help America Vote Act, which is the 2002 bill that handed out somewhere between $2 and $3 billion to the state, maybe even as much as $4 billion to the states to buy electronic voting machines. It was basically a welfare bill for the electronic voting machine companies, which were owned by the Republican corporations, Republican-affiliated corporations. And it was supposed to solve the problems of Florida.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It ended up creating as many problems as it solved. And if these bills aren't written correctly, then they continue to do that again. They just leave wiggle room so that people can interpret that a paper trail can actually be an electronic trail, that they can use cryptology, and that they don't have to use the printed ballot as the ballot of record.
Right.
There's so many important things that have to be done right, or we're just going to be in the same mess 4 years from now.
Yeah, yeah. And odds are, unfortunately, that we will be. I'm concerned about 2 years from now.
Yeah.
I'm very concerned.
Me
about
too.
It. And we need to be getting active about this. We need to be speaking to our elected officials on a regular basis, on a weekly basis, in my opinion. And so, therefore, let me give out the phone number one more time for the
great website, votersunite.org, by the way.
Votersunite.org, yes, yeah. Absolutely. And there's several other sites that also address this issue of Count Votes U.S. And anyhow, here's the phone number for Congress, area code 202. And whoever your senator or a congressperson is, you can reach them at this telephone number, 202-224-3121. 202-224-3121. 3121. And I encourage you to call Congress, call your member of Congress right now. And, you know, odds are you won't get them on the phone, but you will get a staffer on the phone. And you would be surprised how the word does circulate. Even when you get a hold of a member of Congress who strongly disagrees with you and they just politely say, well, I'm sorry, that's not this person's position. Congressman so-and-so doesn't agree with that. You say, well, nonetheless, I want you to know I'm a constituent. I live in the – be sure that you're calling your member of Congress. And it does – it will have some impact over time.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, thanks a lot for the call, Greg. Good to hear
from you.
Thanks,
Tom.
I do appreciate it. And Fannie Mae? Yeah, Freddie Mac. Fannie and Freddie. Another story from today's Wall Street Journal that caused my eyeballs to bug out. We'll come back to the bankruptcy thing in a minute. This is a huge story also, but this, I have been for 3 years now on this radio program talking about the fact that Alan Greenspan, and apparently Paul Krugman danced around this today in an op-ed piece in the New York Times. I've been told about it. I haven't read it. I just didn't get a chance to get to it and didn't read it. But apparently, pointing out that Greenspan has been acting as a party hack. I've been saying for 3 years that Greenspan was cranking down interest rates frantically ever since George W. Bush was elected. Because he knows that the effect of interest rates shows up a year, 2 years, 3 years down the road, the real substantial effects in terms of jobs and, you know, the major impact on the economy. And, I mean, they're both short-term and long-term effects. And that he was willing to risk the long-term effect. Excuse me. We'll take the long-term, short-term out of the equation. Just make it very simple. He was willing to risk the creation of an explodable housing bubble. Not unlike, you'll recall back in the late 90s, he was talking about irrational exuberance in the stock market. You know, he's a little understated, Mr. Greenspan. We have to maintain a certain level of worker insecurity. By that he means unemployment, you know, so that people will be willing to work for cheap. In any case, he was willing, and I've been saying for 3 years now that Alan Greenspan was willing to risk a housing bubble that could take down millions of members of the middle class. Maybe tens of millions. Take them down financially. Wipe them out. Because the value of their houses would go up radically and rapidly. They would borrow against it to put their kids through school and to survive on because their pay is degrading as the unions are being wiped out and the war against labor in America continues and our jobs are being exported overseas and on it goes. Immigrants coming into the country and whatnot. All this stuff. That Greenspan was willing to risk that housing bubble that could do so much damage to the American middle class in exchange for trying to make the economy look good in the year 2004 so that George W. Bush could get reelected. And that this is, of course, not the first time this has happened. I mean, this happened back during the Nixon administration as well. And here now in today's Wall Street Journal, Fannie Freddie Holdings under fire. Now, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are two federally chartered corporations that have gone from being originally sort of federal agencies that helped out the banks to issue high-risk loans and whatnot, have gone from that to being agencies that buy and broker loans, home mortgages, and again, help out the banks. I mean, they've somewhat privatized them. You can buy stock in them now. Although they're still overseen by the federal government. They're sort of a hybrid now. But here's some startling stuff in here. For this article by James R. Haggerty, Federal Reserve Chairman Alan Greenspan called for severe reductions in the mortgage holdings of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, the nation's two biggest providers of funds for home loans. Well, this immediately raises the question, if he doesn't think they should be holding mortgages, why should we? You know, number one, shouldn't, on the business side of it, shouldn't the banks start getting worried? And number two, on the mortgagee side of it, that's us, or are we the mortgagers, whichever, shouldn't we be worried about it? And they got this great big grinning picture of Greenspan here in this Wall Street Journal article. The Fed chief also said house prices could decline in some parts of the U.S. where increases have been extreme in recent years. That's called a bubble bursting, my friends. But that most consumers have enough equity in their homes to weather a decline. In other words, some don't. I can't tell you how many people I know in my age group, you know, in their 40s, 50s, who have mortgaged their homes to the hilt to put their kids through college because they're of the age where their kids are hitting college. And now the rules on student loans have been cranking up and up. You've got to be older and older and older for the kids themselves to actually take out the loans and all this kind of stuff. Mr. Greensands, and not only that, you know, people covering medical expenses. Maybe we'd like to take a vacation. Mr. Greenspan suggested that they shouldn't hold mortgage portfolios of more than $100 to $200 billion apiece. Now, that's interesting, because Fannie Mae is holding $905 billion worth of mortgages. Freddie Mac is holding $654 billion worth of mortgages. And Greenspan is telling them that they should dump all but $100 to $200 billion each. Now, first of all, if they did that, it would create a disaster in the mortgage market. You know, it's not going to happen quickly, unless it happens quickly. And that's where it gets even scarier. He called on Congress. See, he's saying, he's calling on Congress. He called on Congress, quote, to do something to fend off problems which, in my judgment, seem almost inevitable as we look forward into the remainder of this decade, end quote. Now, as I said, this is a problem which Alan Greenspan himself created in order to help George W. Bush get reelected. Well, I'd say elected. He wasn't elected the first time. I don't think he was elected the second time, but that's a whole other topic. Mr. Greenspan went on to say, quote, I think we're running into certain problems in certain localized areas. We do have characteristics of bubbles in certain areas. He quickly added, or he added is how they say it in the Wall Street Journal. He added, I don't expect that we will run into anything resembling a collapsing bubble nationwide. It's time to get out of debt to the extent that you can. It's just because what's going to happen? I mean, you know, what happens is as interest rates go down, people buy homes based not on what they cost, but on how much the monthly payments are. This was not the case for most of the history of this country. Right up through World War II, basically, people saved and then they finally bought a house with their savings. Or they rented. Actually, the vast majority of Americans simply rented. You had a wealthy landowning class, and you had a bunch of renters. And credit, consumer credit, started in the 1920s. As a result, RCA Corporation was the first company to really start offering consumer credit so that people could buy radios. Radio, what you are listening to right now, radio was the internet of its day. It was the thing that drove the stock market in the 1920s to frenzying, dizzying heights. RCA led the pack. The radio manufacturers, the radio broadcasters, and RCA started offering, you could buy a radio on credit. You could pay for it over a 12-month period, and people started engaging in credit, and then home mortgage credit started picking up. So anyhow, now we've got the situation where people buy a house, and they look at the house, and they don't say, can I afford a $100,000 house, or can I afford an $80,000 house, or can I afford a $300,000, you know, whatever. They don't ask that question. They ask the question, can I afford $500 a month in house payments, or can I afford $800 a month in house payments, or can I afford $200? You know, they're asking themselves, how much a monthly payment can I afford? And when interest rates are at 4%, they say, well, you know, if I can afford $800 a month at 4%, that's what? I don't have a mortgage calculator in front of me, but let's say for purposes of example that that's a $150,000 house at 4%. But what happens when that goes up to 8%? That $800 a month is not going to buy a $150,000 house anymore. That $800 a month is only going to buy a $130,000 house. People are still only wanting to pay $800 a month. So what happens is the value of houses starts declining. You've seen the value of housing explode because interest rates have been low. You're going to see it collapse now because interest rates are going up. And this is going to throw a lot of families into bankruptcy. And so now what is the Senate doing? The Senate Judiciary Committee, this is an article in the Wall Street Journal by Michael Schroeder, the Senate Judiciary Committee approved bankruptcy legislation to make it harder for people to walk away from their debts. And with Congress's bolstered Republican majorities, it appears that the long-disputed measure finally may make it into law. It's like they set us up and they're going to knock us over. Thank you, Republican Party. And not to mention a few, more than a few, Democrats who are in on this as well. The bill sponsored by Senator Charles Grassley, Republican of Iowa, and House Judiciary Committee Chairman James Sensenbrenner, Jr., Republican of Wisconsin. In the House and Senate, nearly identical bills to reform bankruptcy. The bill is aimed at limiting the ability of consumers to use Chapter 7 to wipe out credit card bills and other loans unsecured by a house or other asset. And it...
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
We were born before the wind.
There's another guy who can sing.
Also younger than the sun.
Van Morrison.
Yeah, the bonnie boat was won as we sail into the mystic.
What a brilliant, brilliant musician.
Oh, I can now hear the sailors cry. Smell the sea and feel the sky. Let your soul and spirit fly into the mystic.
He's a poet, a music. It's just I am in awe of Van Morrison. One of his Moondance. One of his songs was the theme song for a radio show I did many, many decades ago. We won't go back that far. 1-866-889-8894. Ed in California on the line. Hey, Ed, what's on your mind tonight?
Well, two things here. First of all, you know, some of us are meant to sing in the shower. Other of us are meant to just talk on the radio, and you need to know your place.
Yeah, there's a consensus in the chat room that that if anybody does any singing on this show again, it should be Ira.
I was thinking that. So, nice try.
Yeah.
Well, you were out in California, the million-dollar homes, and there's two words attached to the end of it, fixer-upper.
Yeah, right. There you go.
I'm serious, Tom. You know it.
Yeah.
We get interest-free, we pay interest for 5 years only because the payments are $3,000 to $4,000 a month out here.
Holy cow.
This is an unbelievable place.
Yeah.
You can't buy a one-bedroom condo for less than $350.
That's incredible. And you can buy...
$350 either.
Yeah, and you can buy a nice house in Vermont for... $85,000, $95,000.
Upstate New York, still getting for $30,000.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, in the Mohawk Valley.
Yeah.
So it's just absolutely frightening. But I wanted to say one thing about the election.
Yeah.
Everybody gets paper ballots.
Yeah.
You know, in the paper, all we have to do is just take our paper ballots and drop them in a box afterwards.
Yeah, just like they did in Iraq.
And we can count them if there's a question.
Yeah, there you go. Well, in fact, we could just count them. I mean, the way that they do it in most European countries is the civil servants take a few days off from their regular job. Maybe things slow down at the DMV a little bit for a few days or whatever, and they count the ballots.
That's all we have to do.
And you don't have to pay any voting machines anybody, any money. No billions are necessary. It just, it works. Ed, I got to move along. Thanks for the call, though. I appreciate it, and thanks for the advice on my singing. I'll take it. John in Boston on the line. Hey, John, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I'm sort of flying blind. I don't have my computer on today. I figured I'd just call. But, Ken Blackwell, he's just really laughing at all of us now. And what can the law do about him? Isn't there some sort of conflict of interest law that he's violated?
Well, there's a group of attorneys four attorneys in Ohio that he is prosecuting or persecuting, let's say. I think they're being prosecuted as well, who are, in my opinion, in a pretty good position to bring him down. And he's doing everything he can to prevent that from happening. We'll see. Time will tell whether his possible crimes come to light or not. But it sure seems to me that Ken Blackwell has committed crimes against democracy, if not against the citizens of the state of Ohio. At the moment, though, I don't know of any organized efforts to try and stop him. In fact, he's going to be running for governor,
Yeah, I know.
He's the darling of the Republicans.
It seems like this last election was fixed.
So GWB isn't the president. And every action he's taken so far is illegitimate. What can we do about that?
Well, I don't think we can do anything about that, John, although I do agree with you that it doesn't seem to... I mean, I believe that the exit polls were right, and we should have done what they did in the Ukraine. But we didn't, and so here we are, and so we've got to make the best of it, and we've got to move forward. John, thanks for the call. I do appreciate it. We've got to wrap up the show here. But we do have to move forward. We do have to get active. This bill that was introduced by Barbara Boxer and Hillary Clinton in the Senate yesterday is an important first step. Please contact your senators and tell them to support it. I'm Tom Hartman. See you on Monday. Have a great weekend.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.